Nonetheless, I see the point John Barrymore is making. Although we have not been in this particular spot before, we have been in the general area, and thus have some idea of the terrain we should encounter. We also know that the area is capable of supporting human life, and it is likely that we will be able to come across some groups of survivors. Furthermore, if we find the area somewhat uncongenial, we will have an escape route of some kind planned. If all else fails, we should head for the coast.
Doc, I don't know what's happened to you, but it works for me. I can't remember the last time I saw you in such form.
I shall take that as the compliment it appeared to be. I am, you might say, feeling myself again.
That's good to hear. I suggest we see what there's worth plundering here and then get the hell out. It doesn't look like there's any immediate danger, but I don't feel comfortable underground when I know the mainframe's falling to pieces.
Ryan had done little more than voice a concern that had been lurking at the backs of all their minds. When the support systems of a redoubt began to crumble, they could take years to fail, or one short could start a chain reaction to close it down in minutes. So time was of the essence. The upper levels hadn't been damaged too badly. There were cracks in some of the walls, but nothing like the fissures on the lower level. The main problems were caused by the shorting of electrical circuits that had closed some sectors and effectively sealed them, refusing to respond to the codes. Many of these were in areas where the companions would seek to plunder, the armory, the kitchens and food stores, and stores for clothing and footwear. JB's task was to open the doors without risking further damage to the potentially delicate balance of the redoubt. Under any other circumstance, the task would have been simple, Plasex applied to the points of balance, and then retired to a safe distance. But now he had to be careful about the amounts he used. The armorer meticulously weighed out the Plasex and attached a detonator, making sure that at all times, the companions would shelter from the blast in a position that would leave them on the right side of the explosion for the main exit should the need to flee arise. In the eerie quiet of the deserted redoubt, the tension hung heavy over JB as he prepared each explosion. The charges were enough to bend the doors, giving the companions the leverage they needed to open them manually. The kitchen and clothing stores came easily. In the clothing stores, they were able to kit themselves out in some fresh clothing, still packed in polyethylene, that replaced the tattered rags they had worn from the north. Likewise, the kitchen stores hadn't been raided, although there was some evidence that rats and insects had been able to use the service ducts to get this far up the redoubt levels. As there was no knowing what may or may not have been contaminated, they stuck to self-heats and some foods where the packaging hadn't been tampered with. The huge walk-in freezer compartments were still stocked and sealed. There were three, and although the power had failed in two, the third still contained some deep-frozen perishables that could safely be eaten when defrosted. They stocked up on as much as possible, preferring to keep the self-heats for emergencies. The third door JB had to open was the one that gave him most concern, the armory. It was tricky enough to have to blow the door on an armory at the best of times, but when they were up against a structure riddled with flaws that may give under such stress, it became a much harder task. JB set the charge and looked nervously up at the ceiling before retiring to cover.
If this fucks up, it's been interesting.
The door had been blasted away from one side of the portal, and there appeared to be no residual damage within the room itself. The companions advanced and opened up the room. It was exactly as it had been left before the new cost. At some point, there had to have been an evacuation, as there still lay in one corner an open crate and a clipboard and pen, as though the room had been deserted partway through an inventory of the ordnance. Wasting little time, they equipped themselves with spare ammo, grens, and Plasex from the stores. JB regretfully looked at the crates of unopened and undisturbed blasters. There were rifles, SMGs, and hand blasters, any of which may have replaced their own favorite arms, given time to test them in the ranges. But time was one thing they couldn't allow. The redoubt may be fine for another century, or it may start to crumble at any moment. Once they were equipped, they left the armory, JB casting it a wistful backward glance before heading toward the exit door. The lighting was erratic along the stretch leading to the exit ramp, and all had cause to wonder what they might find beyond the final sector. Had the circuits cut out because of the water damage in the lower levels, or because there were other stresses operating outside the walls on this upper level? Would the sector open to reveal that they had been blocked in by a landfall? The latter was something that Ryan hoped wouldn't be the case. They needed to get out. The redoubt was too unsafe for them to stay, and a jump would be too risky. Out was their only option.
Well, here goes nothing.
Ryan punched in the set code and leveled his Steyr. The chances of anyone lying in wait were next to nothing, but that still wasn't zero. The door rose slowly to reveal a landscape that was lush but strange. Everything was green but low level, as though it were made for small people. The grasses were close to the ground, plants were half size, the trees stunted. But it was a clear day, and it was good to breathe fresh air untainted by sulfur as it swept into the musty tunnel mouth. Ryan stepped cautiously out into a bright sunny morning, with the sky clear but for a few fluffy white clouds. He looked around. The surrounding area was clear, and there were no sounds of bird or animal life within earshot. He beckoned the others to join him.
Gaia, it's like paradise compared to where we've just been.
Yeah, even if it is a kind of half-pint paradise.
Phew.
Not fucking cold.
So far, so good. What do you think, Doc?
It was when he turned to elicit the old man's opinion that J.B. was astounded to see Doc retreating backward into the redoubt, with the door closing on him.
Shit.
Who am I? Is the real me the man who now posits these questions? Or is the real me the man Jordan, whom they say I became for a short while? Is all of this through which I move an artifice? The mere whim of my own imagination? Or is it real? But then, what is reality? Of all the things I remember, of all the things that have occurred within the confines of my own mind over the past few days, there is only the one constant, the search for some kind of truth. Whatever I am, and wherever I am, there is a part of my mind that is still active, and still seeks to find an answer of some kind for what has happened, and what is continuing to happen. If I am to ascertain the truth, then I must follow that course through to the end. That quest is the only one which matters, wherever that leads. If I close the door behind me, then by the time they have noticed my absence, reopened the redoubt and tried to find me, I will have traveled back. Oh, I know only too well that the settings on the Matrans are random, but that is the point. Whatever happens to me next will be a large part of the journey. If fate, or the workings of my own imagination, masquerading as fate, decrees that I end up back in the frozen north, then it shall be nothing more than another sign that I have taken the right path. But I shall miss them. I dimly recall thinking of them as angels at one point in my madness. Perhaps they are, in a sense, guardians of ideal qualities created by my mind, perhaps based on those I have known at some point. Or mayhap they are real, and this world is my reality. In that case, then they are angels of the best kind, firm friends in the face of adversity. I salute them.
What the hell does he think he's doing?
Mildred turned and ran toward the closing sector.
Millie, wait!
JB cast a glance at Ryan, wondering if his friend would want to follow Doc. The old man was still suffering from some kind of psychosis, and the last thing they needed, friend or not, was to become embroiled in more games. But JB need not have wondered. Already, Ryan was catching up to Mildred and passing her on the way to the sector.
Bastard won't start to open until it's fully shut, even if you punch the code in. We've got to get through it and get him. Let the others wait.
Mildred didn't bother to answer, saving her breath to try to keep pace with Ryan's longer stride, particularly if she was going to make it under the door. It was going to be incredibly tight. Ryan was a crucial few feet ahead of her, and he flung himself into the gap.
Yeah!
He flattened himself as much as possible and braced for the impact as his flying body connected harshly with the floor of the tunnel. His shoulder jarred, a tingling numbness shooting down to his fingers. He ignored it, concentrating on rolling so that he could get the hell out of Mildred's way as she came through. She took a flying leap at the ever-narrowing gap, feeling the edge of the door bite as it closed. The door snapped at the toes of her boots as she slid past. Ryan was already on his feet and headed down the tunnel as she picked herself up.
That damn fool old buzzard. We should just leave the old bastard to do what the hell he wants.
Mildred hauled herself to her feet and set off in pursuit. They knew exactly where they were headed, and as they were stronger and faster than Doc, they might just have time to catch him before he entered the Matrans unit. Once the chamber door closed, it would be impossible to open it until the process had been completed. neither of them wasted time. They knew that the others would follow as soon as they could get the sector open. It was imperative that they reach Doc. As they thundered down the lower corridor, they knew Doc could hear them, but it didn't matter. Speed was more important than stealth. They entered the comp room to find Doc about to grab the lever to the unit's door. He was almost crying with frustration as he worked with shaking hands and trembling fingers. He looked up as they approached.
Please, I did not want you to follow me. Allow me to do this.
To do what, Doc? To send yourself off into God knows where?
It is something I must do.
The hell it is.
Doc looked at him, momentarily distracted.
How the hell would you know? You have no idea what I am trying to do, or why.
Then why don't you tell us?
It would take too long, and you would not want me to do it. I do not think you could understand.
Too stupid? Is that it?
No, it is not that. What is the point? You will only stop me anyway.
Tanner stood back from the door. In the distance, they could hear the others approaching.
Come on, Doc. I really don't want to talk about it in here. Let's go topside, and then you can explain. Maybe we'll understand after all.
I somehow doubt that very much, but I suppose I should give you the chance.
Mildred was mildly amused by the confused looks on the faces of JB and Christy when she, Doc, and Ryan calmly walked out of the Madtrans anteroom. There was even a flicker of confusion crossing Jack's albino visage. For the second time, they exited the redoubt and stood in the glorious morning. But there was little attention to be paid to the landscape or the blazing clear sky. Their priority was handling Doc's problem. A few hundred yards from the entry to the redoubt was a small clump of trees, twisted and stunted with thick growth on their boles, but enough canopy to provide shelter from the heat and brightness of the sun. They took refuge beneath these, and Doc started to explain what had caused him to turn back. It was a long, rambling tale. Sometimes he had to stop and go back on the story, as though there were parts that he even had to explain to himself, which was no surprise, as what had made so much sense when mulled over within the confines of his own head now seemed to be disjointed and absurd when spilled out loud. He could see from the faces around him that they were having trouble understanding the questions he had to ask himself and the non sequitur answers that had caused him to take his instinct-led course of action. He finished up weakly, shrugging, and telling them that he didn't expect them to understand, but that it was something that he had to do.
Look, Doc, you weren't with us when that bill went up. Well, you were, but you were this other person. And then you were unconscious. You didn't see what happened to it. There was no way anyone could have got out of there. The whole tribe, except for maybe those who stayed behind at the Ville, were wiped out. There is no one for you to go back to. Even supposing that by some miracle the Madtrans took you back to the right redoubt, and you could find your way on foot from there without freezing. We only made it as a group because we could support one another. You'd have no one to lean on if you had to.
Yes, I understand completely what you are saying. But can you not see that it makes no difference? This is not about being rational. This is about following an innate conviction, because I cannot trust that which I see and hear around me. As far as I know, in an empirical sense, you may not even exist.
Mother Sonia told me about some old ideas from before Newcost, but that's a new one on me.
Doc, I've listened to what you've said, and although I can't totally understand, I ask you to trust me on one thing. As far as I'm concerned, I know I'm here, and knowing that, I trust my senses. And what they tell me, as a trained physician, is that you've been through an immense trauma from fever followed by a concussion. From my perspective, this is real, and the things in your head that make you doubt yourself are the symptomatic results of a definite medical cause. It would be wrong of me as a doctor to let you follow your instinct at the risk of your own safety. I would recommend that we take you with us, even if at this stage we have to do it by force.
Doc's face hardened as he looked around. He was met with features as determined as his own.
I have no doubt that you would do that. I am outnumbered, and I have little choice but to acquiesce.